This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, co-host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is March the 12th, 2024. It has been 3,697 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 21 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 18 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Monday and Tuesday morning. It has been a very busy 24 hours. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. The Russia-Ukraine War Report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, Operational Commands North, South and East of Ukraine, Open Source Intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. Here is the daily assessment. 1. In our assessment, the cross-border attacks by Free Russian forces in the Kursk and Belgorod regions of Russia are meant to taint the impending sham presidential elections in Russia and create unrest. 2. The Kremlin has failed in its plan to capture the remainder of the Luhansk and Donetsk oblasts by the start of the Russian sham presidential elections. This is the last day for this entry. 3. The revisiting of the October 2022 Russian threats to use nuclear weapons, which we had assessed was a very low risk, is part of a Russian hybrid warfare campaign embraced by elements of the United States government to discourage additional military and financial support for Ukraine. 4. The United States has ended financial and military aid to Ukraine unless there is an unforeseen event that changes congressional leadership before the 2024 elections. 5. Ukraine's artillery shortage has been partially resolved, with the first batch of the 170,000 to 195,155 mm artillery rounds promised by the European Union arriving. 6. While Russia holds the initiative throughout the theater of war, the ability to sustain intense combat operations in more than 3 areas of operation has culminated. 7. Despite the improving situation, we maintain that Ukraine continues to use a Fabian strategy to wear down Russian combat power while conserving resources. 8. By April, Ukraine's acute shortage of air defense missiles will become catastrophic if additional support is not found. 9. Our assessment that the Kremlin is preparing to complete the transformation of the governmental structure into a dictatorship, culminating after the results of the sham presidential elections are released, was accurate. 10. While the possibility of an intentional nuclear accident caused by Russian occupiers at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant remains low, the condition is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. 11. Russian-aligned assets have co-opted the ongoing Polish border blockade, which has become an open act of hybrid warfare against Ukraine and the Baltic states. We begin today's war report in northeast Donetsk Oblast in the Donbas, because there is little to report from Kharkiv and Luhansk Oblasts. In the Bakhmut area of operation, also known as NAO, Russian mercenary male blogger Vogonzo's claim about a Russian advance in Bogdanivka was false, with Ukrainian troops pushing Russian troops back northwest of the settlement. the war map was updated. Fighting continued in Ivanivske, but there was a lack of clarity on the situation. War Gonzo stated, quote, Bakhmut, trying to dislodge Ukrainian armed forces from the western end of the settlement, unquote. The General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, or GSAFU, made no mention of Ivanivske, reporting that Russian attacks east of Chasiv Yar and Stupochki were repulsed. In our assessment, the line of conflict is unchanged. In the Klishivka AO, fighting continued north and northeast of Klishivka and east of Andriivka. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, Russian attempts to break Ukrainian defenses in the Avdiivka AO continue to be unsuccessful. Northwest of Avdiivka, the Russian Ministry of Defense, also known as Armored, claimed there was fighting near Novobakhmutivka, but didn't provide any evidence. West of Avdiivka, fighting continued east of Berdychi and Semenivka, in the western and center part of Orlivka, and on the eastern edge of Tonenke. For the south, Russian attempts to advance deeper into the eastern part of Pervomayske and toward the Ukrainian firebase at Nevelske continued. 18 of the 54 Russian-initiated ground attacks were in the Vuhledar AO. Fighting continued south and east of Krasnohorivka and east and northeast of Georgievka. A Russian attempt to advance northeast of Georgievka failed. The armored group was attacked by artillery and drones, with two armor personnel carriers and a tank destroyed. Fighting continued on the southwest edge of Pobeda, with Russian forces making marginal gains. Russian forces tried to advance west through the no-man's land north of Novomikhailivka, suffered heavy losses, including 5 infantry fighting vehicles and an MTLB armored personnel carrier, and retreated. We'll link to the video showing the failed attack in our daily situation report. A link is in the podcast description. In the Staromlinivka AO, a Russian attempt to advance towards Staromayorske was repulsed. In Zaporizhia Oblast, Russian forces continued to launch significant attacks in the Orikhiv AO. Russian assaults northwest and southwest of Verbove were repulsed. Significant fighting continued between the settlements of Robotyne and Novoprokopivka. Ukrainian drone operators targeted 3 bunkers that Russian forces had built into the northern berm of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant retaining pond. The construction of the bunkers and the attack are mutual violations of the principles of nuclear safety. All 3 bunkers were destroyed. Here is what's happening in the Black Sea, occupied Crimea, Mykolaiv and Odessa. The Ukrainian Air Force struck a cargo ship that was beached north of the occupied Crimean village of Vinohradne. The General Staff reported the vessel was being used as a monitoring station at the mouth of the Dnipro River. There is more information about the attack in the rumors section. Wait, we don't cover the rumors section of our situation report in the podcast. Why? Because anything we list as a rumor is unconfirmed and is getting oversized news coverage. After the strike on the beached boat, there were rumors that Russian General Mikhail Teplinsky had been killed in the attack. There is no evidence to support the claim, and this is the fourth time Teplinsky has been reportedly killed. However, we also have no evidence that Teplinsky is alive. He is Schrödinger's general. If you become a subscriber on our Patreon, you'll get access to the daily rumor section. In Odessa, a Shahed 136 struck an infrastructure facility and damaged regional administrative buildings. Windows were blown out in nearby homes and commercial buildings, but no one was injured. Polish farmers were accused of blocking buses and cars at the border checkpoint near Dorohusk. The Consulate General of Ukraine sent correspondence to the Commandant of Police, asking to have a conversation and to prevent further incidents at the border crossings. Polish officials vehemently denied that buses and cars were being blocked, and an inspection by the Consulate General confirmed there were no issues. The situation along the Russian front became very dynamic. In the Belgorod and Kursk regions, three Russian forces launched attacks in at least four areas. The Freedom of Russia Legion announced it was launching a significant ground operation into Russia. Part of the statement included, quote, "Dear fellow citizens, when FABs flew from Belgorod to the once friendly Kharkiv, Moscow cheered. When border regions were shelled in response to Putin's policies, Moscow was silent. When you were taken as meat to the front line, far from home, and loaded into police trucks, Moscow laughed. We are not coming to kill, to erase, to destroy, to punish. We come to free you from your poverty, from misery, from uncertainty, from the dictatorship of a terrorist organization that has seized power. We are Russians like you. We have the right to express our will. And our will is not to recognize a bloody dictator as president of Russia. The Legion is going to the elections. Wait for us." Unquote. The Russian Volunteer Corps statement said shorter, stating in part, quote, "The Kremlin regime's army is dropping its weapons before the fight even begins. If you've been waiting for a moment to join us, this is it." Unquote. The Siberia Battalion also released a brief statement, declaring, quote, "It will not be possible to overthrow the criminal dictatorial regime in Russia peacefully. It can only be removed with weapons in hand. Tonight, we begin to fulfill our promise." Unquote. The spokesperson for the main Directorate of Intelligence of the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense, UHUR, Andriy Yusov, denied involvement, saying, quote, "The Freedom of Russia Legion, the Russian Volunteer Corps, and the Siberian Battalion on the territory of the Russian Federation act as independent units, since they consist of citizens of the Russian Federation. They are, after all, at home. It is likely that a joint operation of these units is currently taking place on the territory of the so-called Russian Federation." Unquote. Russian sources reported that multiple government systems in the Belgorod region were knocked offline in a cyber attack shortly after the joint Free Russian Forces crossed the border in at least four locations. The official channels of regional governor Vyacheslav Gladkov were taken over and were used to spread disinformation. In the Kursk region, videos showed fighting was ongoing between Free Russian and pro-Putin Russian forces in Tyotkina. The governor of the Kursk region, Roman Starovoyt, denied that Free Russian forces entered the settlement, despite the available open-source intelligence. At least one armored personnel carrier attached to pro-Putin forces was destroyed. In the Belgorod region, Free Russian forces were fighting in Kozinka, between Tsapovka and Bagun-Gorodok, and attacking south of Shebekina. The Freedom of Russia Legion reported they had full control of the border checkpoint at Lazava-Rutka. In Shebekina, the bus station announced that all transit services had been stopped until the, quote, "missile threat" was over, while shelling was heard in the background. Residents were sharing videos with the sound of ongoing gun battles. In the Bryansk region, Governor Alexander Bogomaz reported that anti-terror protocols were being put in place, but didn't provide any other details. Local residents reported that pro-Putin security forces were closing streets in the regional capital. The Federal Security Service of Russia, FSB, denied there were any incursions, claiming 100 Free Russian forces were killed and 6 tanks and 20 infantry mobility vehicles were destroyed. Belgorod Governor Gladkov destroyed the Kremlin version of the situation, claiming that there had been no fighting at all in the region, saying that the sounds of gunfire were related to anti-drone activity. Quick assessment. If you believe that 100 Free Russian troops were killed and that they even had access to 6 tanks and 20 infantry fighting vehicles, I would love to talk to you about investment opportunity that NFTs offer. But wait, there's more. In Kstova, in the Nizhny Novgorod region, at least one Ukrainian one-way drone struck the Lukoil Norse refinery, destroying the distillation unit. The Nizhny Novgorod governor, Gleb Nikitin, confirmed that the oil processing unit was on fire, and a video recorded by a motorist confirmed the distillation unit was destroyed. The Nosy refinery processes 15 million metric tons of crude oil in 2022, 5% of Russia's entire refining capacity. In our assessment, the damage could take up to a year to repair. In Oryol, a Russian oil depot in the southeastern part of the city was hit by a Ukrainian one-way drone. One storage tank was destroyed. After the attack, a tank holding 150 metric tons of gasoline started leaking, forcing the evacuation of 17 nearby apartment buildings. In the Abukhova district of St. Petersburg, the Yuzhna combined heating and power plant was on fire. No other information was available at the time of recording. After the drone attacks, there were reports in Russian state media that the leadership of state-controlled energy companies want to hold a meeting with the Kremlin. Frustration is growing as the state-run enterprises continue to meet the demands of the military while refineries and depots are, quote, poorly protected, unquote. I think someone just broke the don't say war laws. And I have breaking news. In the Ivanovo region of Russia, an Il-76 heavy transport had its number 3 engine fall off in flight, leading to the plane being unable to maintain flight. The Il-76 crashed in the forest, 2 kilometers from the Bogorodskaya military airfield. All 15 people on board, 8 crew members and 7 passengers, were killed. The loss of the airframe is another 1% degradation of Russia's heavy airlift capability. Russian and Ukrainian sources reported that on March the 8th, the Russian rocket arsenal depot in Kotlubany, Volgograd, was attacked by 2 Ukrainian drones. On November the 15th, 2023, the depot was successfully hit by a Ukrainian drone, destroying one of the storage facilities. The area has been obscured by clouds, preventing satellite intelligence. In our assessment, all of these attacks are meant to taint the upcoming sham presidential elections, exposing the soon-to-be dictator for life Vladimir Putin as Tsar with no clothes. At the time of recording, we remain unsure how serious the attacks in Belgorod and Kursk are, but all 3 Free Russian units declared this would be a sustained effort.
You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. Our team of journalists, researchers, and analysts is funded by readers, listeners, and viewers just like you. To support independent journalism, please consider becoming a patron. You can find us on patreon.com at Malcontent News.
Here is my theater-wide update. On March the 10th and the 11th, Russia launched 25 Shahed 136 one-way drones, with 15 shot down by the Air Force and 1 by the Navy. Ukraine started official negotiations with regulators in the United States and the European Union to restart commercial air service. A number of airports are being considered, and Ukrainian officials are consulting with Israel on maintaining airport operations in a war zone. United States news agency CNN reported that Russia is producing 3 million rounds of ammunition a year, almost triple the combined output of the United States and Europe. There's a problem. The report contains a lot of errors and assumptions. The CNN report included ammunition of all calibers for Russia, while comparing Western production of only NATO 155mm rounds. European nations are producing 122 and 152mm Soviet rounds, and the US and the United Kingdom continue to produce 105mm rounds. Moving to assessment. The estimate made by CNN is very optimistic. Russia is firing approximately 10,000 shells a day, almost double the rate from over the summer. If Russia were producing 3.5 million artillery shells a year independently, it would not be partially reliant on aid from North Korea. The math in the CNN story? It doesn't math. But we do agree that Western efforts to increase ammunition production have fallen far short, and immediate action is required across the NATO alliance and allied nations. Respected military analyst Michael Kaufman said that the main limiting factor in 2024 for Russian forces will be the availability of military hardware. The secondary issues are ammunition shortages when compared to 2022 and the shrinking number of personnel. Russian commanders are consuming heavy equipment, ammunition and personnel faster than they can be replaced, forcing the activation of Cold War equipment such as T-55 tanks and BTR-60 armored personnel carriers. Additionally, Russian commanders still rely on disjointed ad hoc attacks with poorly trained troops. If you're starting to get a sense that the tide is slowly turning on the battlefield, you would be correct. But don't get too excited, the situation is still very difficult. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky told French President Emmanuel Macron that, quote, "Your children will not die here, and there is no reason to deploy European troops into combat as long as Ukraine stands firmly against Russia." The Secretary-General of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, said that NATO has no plans to send troops to Ukraine, and any independent deployment from a NATO alliance nation would need approval. Stoltenberg's reasoning is that a deployment would affect all the allies in general due to the Collective Defense Pact. Former head of NATO, Czech President Petr Pavel, challenged Stoltenberg's conclusion, quote, "It should be remembered that after the annexation of Crimea and the occupation of a part of Donbas, which was essentially aggression, although on a much smaller scale than today, a NATO training mission was operating on the territory of Ukraine, which at one time included more than 15 countries and numbered about 1,000 people. From the point of view of international law and the UN Charter, nothing will prevent the troops of NATO member states, as well as, for example, civilians, from helping in Ukraine." Unquote. With the debate about when, where, and how troops could be deployed, President Macron announced that he was delaying his planned trip to Kyiv for a second time. US news agency Politico reported that Macron would arrive in the next few weeks and wanted to wait until he had more tangible results from ongoing negotiations. The New York Times reported that F-16s for Ukraine had been delayed for another month, with only 6 aircraft expected to arrive in July of the 45 committed. The story indicated that 12 Ukrainian pilots will have completed their training by the summer. The Foreign Minister of Germany, Annalena Baerbock, said that a circular exchange of Taurus cruise missiles to the UK, which would then send Storm Shadow cruise missiles to Ukraine, was possible. Shortly after her interview with Der Spiegel, Chancellor Olaf Scholz ended all discussions on a three-way trade. Quote, "Taurus will not happen, neither directly nor indirectly. My clarity is there. This is my task as Chancellor, as head of government, to express myself precisely here and not to raise misleading expectations." Unquote. The director of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, William Burns, warned that Ukraine will suffer significant territorial losses during testimony to the Senate Special Committee on Intelligence. In his assessment, continued U.S. aid will enable Ukraine to return to offensive operations by 2025. Next up, we travel to the lands of exploding oil refineries, crashing planes, and civil unrest. It's time for Mobik's Mobilization and Mir. Vladimir Grubnik, Russian mail blogger, turbo patriot, and a close associate of former FSB colonel and Russian prisoner Igor Strelkov-Girkin, wrote that regular Russian troops were active and fighting in the Donbas in 2014. Grubnik joins Girkin and the deceased leader of PMC Wagner Group Yevgeny Prigozhin, who has directly stated that Russian forces were fighting in the Donbas as early as 2014. "I could have told you that. I was there." Russian mercenary mail blogger Yegor Guzenko, better known as 13th, appeared to fake his own death. On March the 11th, pictures appeared online claiming to show Guzenko after Chechen troops murdered him. Even among his friends, questions were instantly raised due to his missing beard and a lack of gunshot wounds, bruises, and blood. Guzenko then posted 3 videos claiming he faked his death to help identify Ukrainian spies. Recently, the Russian mail blogger hasn't appeared to be in a good mental state, and has claimed in the past that Chechen forces have threatened to kill him. Russia dropped to third place for global arms exports for the first time since the collapse of the Soviet Union. Sanctions, the inability to fulfill existing orders, the poor performance of key weapon systems like the S-400 air defense complex, and large customers backing away moved France to second place, behind the United States. Putin's purge is accelerating, with elections less than a week away. The courts in Moscow have started fining people who attended the funeral service for political prisoner Alexei Navalny. The Ministry of Internal Affairs is using video, pictures, and facial recognition software to identify attendees and serve them with administrative violations of Russia's so-called Don't Say War laws. Ukraine's National Resistance Center released documents that outline President Putin's post-election plans to turn Russia into an absolute dictatorship. Key agenda items in the document from the Russian Academy of Sciences include an increased nationalization of the economy with all raw material industries to be under state control, the nationalization of science, art, and culture so they align with traditional Russian values, the strengthening of censorship and citizen monitoring, including the internet and TV, the elimination of opposition movements, and preparation for continued war after the Ukrainian campaign. The planning document also stated that, quote, after the conclusion of the special military operation in Ukraine and the fall of the Kyiv regime, Russia's confrontation with the West will not stop, but only intensify, unquote. Moving to assessment. Even if the document is fake, we believe that President Putin and the Kremlin are working to carry out all of these measures after the sham election. The State Duma passed a resolution that reduced the age of adult criminal responsibility for the crime of sabotage from 16 to 14. Teenagers can face life in prison for committing acts of sabotage, undergoing training, or participating in the sabotage community. President Putin signed a new decree creating a new state title, Honored Worker of the Penitentiary System. An employee of the Federal Penitentiary Service can earn the award by, quote, personal merit in the efficient execution of criminal penalties and preventative measures, and for strengthening law and order, unquote. Employees with at least 20 years of service and who earned other state awards will be eligible. Russian security forces started widespread searches, interrogations, and detainments of multiple actors, musicians, and artists across Russia. Actor, activist, and spokesperson Pyotr Verzilov was accused of high treason, sparking the wave of arrests, which included Verzilov's mother. Also arrested musician Natalia Chetverio, artists Ilya Mazgi, Artem Filatov, Andrei Olenev, and Yegor Holtov, and Rita Flores and Olga Kurachova of the band Pussy Riot. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening,